How is it that interest rates are so low when everybody just knew they had to go up this year? From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Looking at a fresh ranking of economists who got it right and those who got it wrong about interest rates in 2014, and whom do we see at the tippy top of the list? Why, it is Marketplace Morning Report regular Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, David.
I know you to be a modest man, not one to toot one's horn, so let me do it for you. Most of these forecasters knew in their bones that interest rates had to go up in early 2014. Meanwhile, you were saying what?
That they would go lower, quite a bit lower. Actually, our forecast was that we'd get to about 2.5%. We were looking at three different things. One of them was growth. I thought the consensus forecast for GDP growth was much too strong. The second was bond supply. And the third piece was the bond buyers themselves, particularly foreign buyers who have been staying on the sidelines. We figured that they would have to start buying soon. And in fact, that turned out to be the biggest element here. Buyers from Asia and Europe who finally capitulated and started participating again.
And look how much money is riding on this. I mean, it's not just if you're in or out of the bond market. This is helps define the interest rates that we pay for everything.
That's the important part, because the Treasury bond market determines the cost of funds for everybody. It's the biggest corporations coming in to get a loan, but it's also individuals who use credit cards, get student loans, or mortgages. All of those rates price off of bond yields. Lower bond yields means lower borrowing costs for everybody.
And look at that. I'm talking to the guy who said that interest rates would be at 2.5% mid-year. July 11th, I'm looking now, the yield on the 10-year Treasury, 2.52%. All right, Chris, I promise not to call you when you get it wrong in 6 months, okay? Is that a deal?
You know what? It is a deal, but it's totally fair. You can call. I'll be happy to talk about it.
All right. Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Big brands are adding social media to their advertising budgets, often placing ads directly with individuals who've built large followings on sites like Instagram, YouTube, and Vine. But how do companies and these influencers actually hook up? Reporter Tracy Samuelson explains.
Back in November, the internet fell in love with photos of a little towhead boy napping with his puppy coiled around him. His mom, Jessica Scheiba, posted the photos on her blog and Instagram feed, Mama's Gone City. Suddenly, she was everywhere.
And at that point, I hired an agent.
Well, agent's maybe not quite the right word. She's more of a matchmaker.
You know, when I introduced her to brands or to, you know, PR representatives, I introduced her as being in charge of my sponsorships and partnerships.
Whatever the title, it was clear Scheiba needed help. On Instagram alone, she has nearly 500,000 followers, which draws lots of attention from brands. On the other side of the table, companies need help finding the Scheibas of the internet. These matchmakers can range from independents, like Scheiba's rep, or fancy tech startups. But the questions they help answer are similar.
You know, how do I go about finding the 30 people who are the perfect brand ambassadors for me? And once I find them, how do I get their email address? And once I have their email address, how do I reach out? How much should I be paying them? And how do I know what the return on my investment is?
Rob Fishman is the co-founder of Niche.
Niche, snitch, tomato, tomato.
Which helps companies place packages of ads across a handful of social networks. Another company, Relio, focuses exclusively on YouTube ads. Ben Williams is one of Relio's founders.
YouTube's the big dog. Everyone knows that's where you go first.
Williams shows me a video from a deal he brokered. It's sponsored by Squarespace, a company that helps people make websites.
On your mark, get set, go.
The video's producer stages a race between two smartphones, testing their processing speed. But the phones aren't products Squarespace actually sells.
And this is more for sort of brand recognition, like traditional advertising.
Okay, and that has about 330,000 views.
Yep.
From people who have chosen to watch the video, which is the real match companies are seeking. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
And a report on the midday news on China's state-run TV network today called Apple's iPhone a national security concern because its location tracking could reveal state secrets. At issue is the frequent location function in Apple's current phone operating system, which could reveal wider information about China or, quote, even state secrets, the news report said. It suggested Apple has legal liability if the tracking caused problems. China's been less enamored with U.S. tech companies and their products since the leaker Edward Snowden referred to U.S. spying on Chinese officials, and the U.S. went after members of the Chinese military for alleged hacking. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.